Will you pray with me this morning? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. You know those little cards that you get in the mail that say, save the date? Yes, those are the first clue, the first hint that we often have that a great party is being planned. Usually they are sent by a couple who is planning to marry, and they remind us to mark that time on our calendar so we can be sure to be at the party. Performing weddings is one of the great joys and privileges of what I do. And what I have learned from observation is that planning a wedding can come with a little bit of stress, yes? But we always weather it, and no matter what we've planned, we get through to that part that is the great party. In today's gospel story, we have the story of an over-the-top wedding planning that has gone wrong. It is just wedding planning where everything has gone wrong. It's helpful for us to remember before we jump into the story that Jesus often uses hyperbole and exaggeration when he wants to make a point. After all, it was Jesus who said, if your eye offends you, pluck it out. If your hand offends you, cut it off. I don't think he was really advocating that. And today's story from Jesus is just that kind of story, an elaborate allegory filled with hyperbole. Everything in this story has a deeper meaning. The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who gave a wedding banquet for his son. Now, of course, that son is Jesus, and the king is God. And once we have established that, we get into this strange plot that is this story. An invitation to a feast in honor of the king's son is rejected. Who would do that? If you got an invitation to Jay Inslee's son's wedding, wouldn't you probably go? I mean, he's not exactly the king, but I'm trying to make this work. I know, maybe. I mean, you know what I'm saying. But then, when nobody comes, a second invitation is sent out with the servants whose job it was to deliver these invitations. And this time, the king sweetens the deal by describing this mouth-watering party that he's planning, and the people just shrug it off and say, we're busy. We have things to do at our businesses and our farms. Well, we can probably understand that. People are busy. But then the plot takes a really bizarre turn. The servants who deliver the invitation are tortured and murdered. Whoa, that seems a bit much, but that is where we get the phrase, don't kill the messenger. Yeah. And it's just getting started in this story. The king exacts revenge on all these people who don't want to come to his party by rallying his troops, declaring war against his own people. The city is in ruins. We are told he burns it all down. And he issues the invitation to dinner again. So I wonder, was the dinner just like kept warm all this time while he was pillaging the city, or what? But invitations to the banquet are to be delivered again, and this time they go out into the streets, which had just been reduced to ashes, right? And they invite everyone they can find to the wedding banquet. And everyone comes, the good and the bad. And the banquet hall is filled, and all are welcome at the feast. Now, even with its troubling over-the-top parts, if Jesus had just stopped telling this story right here, we could find good news in the story. You see, for the people for whom this story was written, the original hearers of Matthew's gospel, this story would offer hope. For these folks, the burning city in the parable would have been the city of Jerusalem, which had been destroyed. It had been destroyed by Rome in the year 70. And so the original hearers of Matthew's gospel would have interpreted the story as God's judgment on the people who rejected Jesus as God's presence in the world. And the invitation to all of the people in the story, the good and the bad, would have been a hopeful sign, a sign that the invitation to God's table is wide and that even they, the Gentiles who had no history with God, are welcome there. So in 2014, this story might be a helpful reminder to us. The context, of course, has changed a little bit. We no longer consider ourselves as outsiders in the kingdom, as newcomers in the kingdom. We've been here for a while. So for us, perhaps, it is a good reminder of the wide welcome of the King to everyone who was in the streets, the good and the bad. We like to think that in this day and time, equality among God's people exists, and that we are all God's people, that it is something that we would not struggle for. But the sad truth is that we still live with many kinds of prejudice, with many isms, with sexism and racism and ageism. Our LGBTQ sisters and brothers still fight for the exact same rights as our straight sisters and brothers. And the margins of society are filled with the poor and the sick, the transgendered and the homeless and the mentally ill. And to those streets, the servants of God carry this invitation that says, come, come to the banquet, all of you, come. Whatever you have done, whatever you have failed to do, come to the table. So if the story stopped there, it would be a good parable for both the original hearers of Matthew's gospel and for us. But Jesus doesn't stop there. Instead, he continues to tell the story of the party, which is now going pretty strong, when the king comes in and surveys the guests enjoying themselves and spots one of them who is not dressed appropriately. He has forgotten his wedding robe. Well, of course he isn't dressed appropriately. It was a last-minute invitation to the king's party, and their homes had been burned down by the king's army. So many scholars interpret this part of the story as a reminder that although we are all freely invited and we are all equally welcomed, we cannot forget that it is the king's party, that there are standards and expectations that come along with being at the party, that we are to be prepared and committed for what it means to come to the party, not just slink in the door. And that is true. Grace is not cheap. It is free, but it is not cheap. We are expected and encouraged and called to put on our wedding clothes, to put on our finest banquet garments. Because this is also true. The kingdom of heaven is like a wedding feast. A wedding feast. A feast that had been planned and anticipated and dreamed of for many days. A feast for which save the date cards were sent out. A feast of great celebration where there is dancing and wine and joyous celebration, where there is food to spare, and cake and photos and smiles and hugs and kisses, and it is a grand party. The kingdom of heaven is like a wedding feast. So the problem with this guest who isn't wearing a wedding robe is not that they haven't taken the invitation seriously. The problem is that they didn't come prepared to party. When we are invited to the kingdom of heaven, that is like this great feast, a party of the grandest proportions and the most extravagant love, We had better put on our party clothes and our dancing shoes. We sang that this morning. Gonna put on my something shoes. What shoes did we put on this morning? We put on our shoes this morning. We had better brush up on the latest dance steps and figure out what songs we want to sing when it's time for karaoke. And come hungry. Come hungry. Hungry to be fed with bread and wine, body and blood that will fill us and feed us like nothing else will. Sisters and brothers, we Lutherans are so stoic so much of the time. We know what to say when people say this, the Lord be with you and all, but it's a party. Those words are to help us celebrate. I would say this, the kingdom of heaven is like a big honkin' party, a wedding feast, and all are welcome, even us. And that is the good news, the gospel news, for this and every day. Thanks be to God, amen, let's party. Oh, and as part of that, it's karaoke time, or time for the hymn of the day. We'll stand and sing hymn number 479.